This is an ad by BetterHelp. What are your self-care non-negotiables? It's hard to make time for the things that keep you healthy. But being consistent with self-care is like working a muscle. And when life gets crazy, that muscle keeps you strong. Therapy is the ultimate self-care. And BetterHelp makes it easy to get started with affordable online sessions you can do from anywhere. Never skip therapy day with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com today to get 10% off your first month.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, this is The Advisor with Stacey Chalemi, founder of The Complete Herbal Guide. And today I'm very excited to introduce my new guest, and it's Leah Rachel, and she comes from a literary background. Her grandmother is a published author and poet, and her uncle also co-authored a well-respected book in the 1970s. Leah has been writing short stories since she was a little girl, and she is an author who is in the middle of promoting her new book, Seeking Forgiveness. That's very exciting. So tell us a little about yourself and what you do, and let's hear it all.
Well, first, thank you very much for having me. I'm really excited to be here today. And I'm Leah Rachel. I've been writing since the time I was a little girl. I was a creative writing major in college and had my first short story publications in college. Probably in order to pay the bills, I went on to graduate school and developed a career as a professor. So I'm a professor at the University of Missouri in St. Louis. So I live in St. Louis with my husband and son. And I write novels and publish them as well. And so this is my second published novel, Seeking Forgiveness. It's about interracial adoption. So it's a narrative memoir, I'd like to say. So my family is interracial. We did interracially adopt. And so a lot of the stories and vignettes in the book are based on our personal life and things that happened. But it is a fiction book, not a nonfiction book. I did that primarily to protect my son. Okay. So his backstory and his history is really his story to tell, not mine.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I fictionalized some of the things around him to protect his privacy, but wrote in general about interracial adoption and a story about a family that interracially adopts and what happens.
Wow, that's very exciting. You know, so many people find that it's very hard to adopt. And, you know, and a lot of people I know even have problems because their nationality and culture was different than the child's nationality and culture. And so, you know, the adoption agencies gave the parents a little bit of a problem. Now, did you find that when you were trying to look for a child to adopt?
Well, it was interesting. A lot of people assume that we adopted because of fertility issues, but that's not actually the case. We sort of, in all honesty, were on the fence about becoming parents at all and having children. Mm-hmm. And so we were sort of like waiting and trying to decide. And a colleague of mine who assumed it was a fertility issue, she did suggest that I go to like this workshop of women support group.
Right.
Women and, you know, who are and whatnot. It was a colleague, so I figured I better go to, say I went. And it was at this group that, you know, like you were saying, I met a number of other people who were having fertility issues and were considering adopting across racial lines and a lot of other issues. And I learned about some of the issues. And it's also where the idea of adopting through the foster system sort of came to, like, I hadn't even thought of it before, like wasn't on my radar.
Right.
And I think it isn't on the radar of a lot of people who are looking to build families. They don't always think of that option.
Right.
But when it sort of, I thought about it for the first time, I was like, well, if building a family is about, you know, more than just like me and what I want, but it's also about the child, then I was on board and sort of definitely wanted to do it and came home from that meeting and told my husband and we like signed up. And so, in the classes, we did learn that if you are going to, you don't know what sort of placement you'll get. So you don't know, you know, going in, you're going to get an interracial family, But we did learn a lot in the classes, and you do, you know, going in, you have to know that, you know, be aware of other experiences, be aware of the child and what their needs are. And those needs might be, you know, you learning about other cultures and you learn, you know, making the effort to sort of get out of your safe space sometimes.
Yeah.
Which is what I think parenthood and motherhood is all about in general. But
it is. It really is. Now, this was, you know, a huge step for you. And, it must have been at times very stressful, very happy. You know, there's a lot of emotions going on when you're going through all this, you know. And what brought you to the point where you wanted to write this fictional book? What motivated you to want, you know, even though it's fictional, what drew you to it?
Well, you know, I get a lot of questions from people, from friends, from family, from other people, either questions about our experience, or I'll sometimes tell stories that, and they'll be like, really? You know, that's shocking, or I had no idea. That really surprises me. And so there was a night where I was sort of, I would cuddle my son to sleep sometimes, and I was holding him in bed, and I was recounting some of the sort of things that had happened to us. And I thought, you know, I want to write about this. Like I on some level feel like I need to write about this. I'll tell you a story right around this time when I decided to start writing about the book was when my son turned 5 and it was time to take him to the dentist for the first time. So I called around, from friends, I got the name of the pediatrician. And so we went, you know, made the appointment. I told my son he's, you know, going to get a lollipop and, you know, it's not so bad. And we went. We walk in, and then the receptionist behind the partition, you know, she looked at us through the partition and then closed it and went away for a while, then came back and looked at us very skeptically. And she said to me, well, I need your papers. And I remember saying well, here's our insurance card. I don't know what you want. She's like, no, I need your papers. And I'm like, I genuinely don't know what you're asking. And she said, well, for us to treat the boy, we need approval from his parent or guardian. You can't just see him without approval from whoever's responsible for him. I'm like, I'm his mother, like I'm responsible. And she literally was like, well, you need to prove that.
Wow.
And who goes to the dentist with papers of adoption or birth certificate? I mean, who
I've never heard of it.
You know, we had to leave. And so, you know, we're in the car and my son's like, do we still get a lollipop? I'm like, I'll get you, as I'm buckling him in, I'll get a lollipop. And then I get in my seat and I put the car in reverse to back out of the parking spot. And I look over my seat and make eye contact with my son. And he says to me, did we have to leave because I'm Black? And I said to him,
wow.
No, I said, no, baby, we had to leave because I'm white. And I bring this up because I do feel like, so this happened right around the time I said, I need to start writing a book about this, but
yeah.
It's been a effort of mine to make sure that he doesn't blame himself.
Yes.
When things like this happen. Because that was when he was 5, but we had incidents occur, you know, even earlier.
Yeah.
And these are some of the things that are in the book, like, when do you start discussing race with your child? When do you explain, how do you explain something? These are really tough issues that I try to write about in the book.
So even though it's a fictional book, it's kind of based on some non-fictional areas of your life, you know, that you've gone through. Just you use different probably character names. Did you use different character? Yes. So just to protect the people in your family. Now, I find sometimes when I get into my most, you know, motivational times of my life is when I'm going through, you know, really obstacles and tragedies in my life, I feel like that's when so much pours out of my heart. Now, did you feel like that also?
Yeah, well, you know, it was interesting. So what happened was, so right before this, I had written, and after my last book was published, I actually wrote a whole other book. It's not been published or anything. I wrote a whole other book, and it had, tried to get it published. It wasn't getting that great of a reaction. And I kept getting, because it was definitely fiction, pure fiction. And I was getting, you know, write what you know, write what you've lived. And so I remember one morning, I write in the mornings, I just sat down on my desk, my cup of coffee, and I just poured out a letter to my son, you know, saying should we have adopted? And, you know, what are, just the sort of the seeking forgiveness, which is the title of the novel, some of the themes of the book. And I remember I wasn't trying to write the novel then. I was just sort of pouring out some feelings that were very strong. And writing does help me get through some of these emotions, like you were talking about. And I put it away for a few weeks. And then when I brought it back out, I thought, well, this is probably going to sound awful. But I reread it and I thought, you know, that's really not awful. And I'm writing what I know. I'm writing what's very emotional. And I know that, again, a lot of people have asked me questions about and been curious about and want to know more about. And so I was like, let me just keep going with this.
Yeah.
And then I kept, and I have so many of the emotional moments in our lives in there. And it really was, I feel like, beneficial for me to process them. And I hope it, on some level, like a love letter to my son, for him to see, you know, how we went through some of these things as a family.
And I think, you know, that you have to also realize that you're not alone, that there are so many other people probably going through the same issues. And as you even speak, I know one couple that went through very similar issues, just like you. And, you know, it's very taunting, you know, our society, you know, each, you know, decade grows up a certain way. And even though it might not be the right way, you know, when people are brought up in an environment and certain things are embedded in their mind, you know, that's what they tend to believe. And sometimes those beliefs are hard to break, even though they see it, the truth right in front of them, they still, you know, the things that they were brought up with stay in the back of their head. And yeah, sometimes it's very hard to break.
Yeah. Well, I have to say, you know, I feel like, you know, the target audience for this book is probably, you know, families that have interracially adopted, but beyond that, there's also just adoption in general. I mean, I have stories in there that I think relate to just adoptive parents, you know, as well as families and whatnot. But, you know, for Mother's Day this year, earlier in the summer, I had published in, you know, local newspaper, an article about motherhood. And it was a little bit like very early press for this book. And I, right after that was published, I got a number of emails. I had one elderly woman write, you know, in like big cursive handwriting, and send with me a picture of her interracial family, you know, her son's, you know, much older, she's in her 80s now. But I got all this response from people saying, oh my God, thank you for finally writing about this. I'm sure it was, you know, so much, you know, more difficult for the woman who'd done this 50 years ago.
Yeah.
But people saying, you know, there's not enough literature about this, not enough stories told. And, you know, we really appreciate your writing about this. And it was just so touching because I felt like, you know, all those hours spent writing and editing and, you know, re-editing,
yeah,
are worth it when so many people are curious about the topic.
I have to say, I believe if it helped, you know, while you're writing it, if it helps you, then it's definitely going to help somebody else out there. And it's not about the quantity, it's about the quality. And if you could help one person out there, then yeah, you've reached your goal, you know. And this is definitely a great topic, I feel, because it's not talked about enough. You
yeah
know, you don't really hear about adoption and interracial adoption. You hear people talking about how hard it is to adopt and they want
right
children and so forth and the process they have to go through, but you don't really hear about interracial adoption.
And it really is useful to think about. I mean, so, you know, I, a little bit also, you know, to an earlier question you had, I mean, when we were going through the process of fostering to adopt, I mean, we did, you know, hear about and run into people who didn't believe in interracial adoption and didn't
right
believe that white people could safely adopt, especially a Black son. And
yeah,
I remember, you know, and this is in the book, when I first heard this, I was a little surprised, but then Kate, you know, worked to understand the issue and said, I get it now. I totally get it now. If you're not, you know, going to make the effort, it can be sort of not good for the child who will feel out of place and maybe unaware of his own culture. So it is really important. I mean, I will say the good thing about this book, you know, it is my second one. My previous one was about like, you know, women in the 1500s, you know, didn't have much choice and
yeah
who they married and whatnot. So that book was a little sad. This one's much more hopeful. I mean, this one does present a lot of these issues. It does present a lot of these difficulties. And I do know that, I mean, I have a very, very close friend who told me, you know, she just had a long discussion with other friends about whether, she even believes interracial adoption is a good idea or not. So I know these are out there issues, but the book, at least I feel like, gives a hopeful account,
yeah,
which is, I feel like we need hope today.
We do need hope. And you know what? What bothers me is it's just a shade. You know, we have, every culture has a different shade, quote unquote. So what makes, you know, because, you know, certain communities and certain cultures might have a darker shade of color, they're still the same person inside. Yeah. We all are the same person inside. It doesn't matter how we look on the outside.
Yeah.
It doesn't, you know, it, what matters is that we are the same inside, and,
yeah.
and we think the same, we feel the same, we react the same, we yeah. love the same.
Yeah.
So why can't we be treated the same and looked yeah. as an equal, you know, on an equal level, you
yeah.
know?
Yeah, I agree. And again, I think, you know, one of the themes that comes up in the book is just how surprised, so the book is, you know, from the mother's perspective, how surprised she gets when people, you know, don't see them as a family or don't see them as a cohesive unit, which on some level, you know, also gets that doesn't see, you know, what's maybe in, inside of them and judges from the outside. But again, this relates to, you know, any family that's adopted. I mean, I have a story when my son was turning one for his first birthday, a really good friend of mine since college days flew out to be there. And while she was visiting, at some point I mentioned how, you know, when Hanukkah comes up, my father was Catholic, but my mother was Jewish. So we celebrate Hanukkah and we were going to buy presents. And I remember this friend of mine said, "Wait a minute, you're raising your son Jewish?" And I said, "I don't know. I mean, a little bit." And she was like, "I thought his birth mother was Christian." I said, "Yeah." And she's like, "Well, then you have to raise him Christian." And it struck me, one, because I didn't understand how that would work if I identified, like how I could. But what really shocked me was just that other people did not see our family as a cohesive unit. Like, I see adoption as permanent. I mean, I feel like my son is of my flesh and blood. I mean, I know he's not. I didn't give birth to him. But it's like, for me, we are a family like any other family. Like, you know, if it's inconceivable for somebody else to be told to raise their son a different religion than they are, it should be inconceivable to say that to an adoptive parent as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's amazing sometimes how other people don't view, you know, you how you see you. They don't see the inside of you. They don't see our family as a cohesive family. And it can be shocking, and you know, it's been interesting to learn how to deal with some of this.
I feel people are very easily open to be very opinionated and give their opinions, but you cannot give your opinion unless you walk through that person's shoes. How do you know how that person feels? And how can you judge how that person feels if you have not walked through their shoes? You know, you might feel completely different if you went through what that person went through.
Right. And I think that's one of the reasons it's really important for parents of interracial families to make an effort to learn about other cultures, because you can't know everything. You can't, you know, understand other cultures. So you really have to make the effort and just be open-minded.
Yes.
So just, you know, don't act like you do know everything. Don't act like, you sort of know what a child's going through. And again, these are sort of themes that are, I just feel like, you know, broader for just families in general.
Yeah.
It's hard to, you know, I mean, it's hard for me to even know what it's like to be a boy,
right?
You know, a little black boy. So like, it is really important for us to be open-minded and like willing to listen and willing to communicate. And sometimes it can be tough. I mean, my son went through a phase, and this, you know, is in the book as well, when he was younger. When I would ask him to like brush his teeth at night or do his homework, and his response to me was, "You don't know what it's like to be black." That would actually be his response. And I would say, "Sweetie, you are right. I have no idea. I still need you to brush your teeth." And then we'd move on, you know, so I'm acknowledging he's right. I'm not going to say like, I know what his life is like, but
right.
You still need to brush your teeth.
You know? Right. Yeah. And kids also know how to manipulate, you know, they can try to change things around to get off the topic because they don't want to brush their teeth.
Right. And, you know, when he realized he wasn't going to get currency from that in terms of not doing his homework, you know, it was a phase that passed, you know, it definitely passed.
Yeah. Now what, you know, you have a profession, you are a professor. So writing was like a secondhand job in a sense, because you already have one career going. What motivated you to focus, you know, so much attention to get this book done? You know, what motivated you? Because it's a lot of work to write a book.
It is. And it's funny, you know, like a year or so ago, I was having lunch with some of my colleagues and I asked them if like their current job as a professor was their, you know, number one job or their like second best choice. And surprisingly, nobody wanted to be a professor. Like one colleague wanted to be like a private investigator, if they could choose anything, you know, another wanted to be like a stud man. And I always wanted to be an author. I mean, if I had been born independently wealthy and hadn't had to worry about anything, I would have, you know, tried to be an author from the beginning. And I feel like I almost wish I hadn't been as risk averse as I was and I had, because it continues to be my passion. Mm-hmm. And so, and I do believe, and you probably understand this, you know, if you have a passion for something, you find a way to sort of do it. And I mean, very similar to what you said before, I do feel like writing, and maybe one of the reasons I like it so much is it is cathartic. I mean, it's like therapy for me.
Yeah.
And so I sit down every morning, and I write every morning for 2-3 hours, like non-fail. And I feel so much, I mean, if I'm like sick or have a cold or something, or I'm on an airplane and I can't, I don't feel as good that day. Like it really is useful for me. And, you know, I've been doing it so long that I feel like I've honed some of the skills. You know, I've gone to Iowa Writers Workshop and stuff like that. And it's just a passion. And when it's a passion, you find the way, I think.
You really do. And I love that you journal, because, you know, I talk about it in many of my books as well, because I feel like when you journal, you get those repressed emotions out and they go on paper, and it's actually therapeutic. And you actually sometimes can learn after you read what you've written, you come to conclusions that you didn't even realize, you know. Yeah. It's therapeutic, and you're also learning, and it's educational at the same time. And it also, I think, helps a person move on to the, you know, and so they don't get stuck and stagnant in the area that they're in. Yeah. So I think that's great. I really do.
I mean, you know, so some of the stuff I wrote about, I mean, I think, you know, all families have like the crazy uncle or like, you know, just relatives who are different than you and whatnot. And, you know, and I did have one family member that really did not seem, I don't know if approving is the right way, bored, but necessarily like certainly understanding of our adoption. And I wrote about it a little bit in the book, but I did notice when I wrote about it initially, it did help me process it. And it did help me also realize a little bit, you know, where the uncle was coming from, the perspective. I mean, I still feel like he's got work to do.
Right.
But, you know, but there is something to trying to understand. I mean, part of the problem, actually, this uncle of mine's from overseas, and I do feel like it was a language barrier a little bit, some of what the problem was, because English wasn't his native tongue. And so writing helps you like think through and process some of these things. And it's interesting, you know, it's all coming from your own head, and yet you start to realize new things when you write it down, for sure.
And I feel like, you know, sometimes, you know, family members sometimes feel that they have the right to voice their opinion about things. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I was going to ask you even before you just started the conversation, how did you deal with other people? Because, you know, with their own opinions, you know, because a lot of people, you know, always have something to say. And sometimes that can be very hurting to the other person. And sometimes you have to develop a thick skin. And I spoke with somebody and I was telling them about, you know, some of the instances that I went through, and people were very opinionated to tell me what they thought. And sometimes it was very hurting what they said. Yeah. And the person stopped me and said, you know what, that's not your problem. It's their own issues and what they're going through. So sometimes we get hurt by other people's opinions, but then we have to stop, just like you said, and they're having their own issues, and maybe they were brought up differently, or maybe they went through things in their own life and they can't comprehend, you know, the decisions that you're making. But it doesn't mean that you're wrong, you know. You have to, you know, did you have to develop a thick skin, or did you have to just realize?
Yeah. So it's interesting, you know, what you're saying. And there's, you know, there's, I feel like two aspects to that. I mean, one is when things are sort of said to me and I have to decide whether to respond in the moment or not. But I think, you know, for me, the harder and more difficult and bigger issue is what happens when they happen in front of my son.
Yes.
So, you know, we've had people ask me if I have any real children too, when he's been standing there. I had people ask me, like, you know, if I breastfed him and it's funny because I think sometimes what was happening was some of these people are trying so hard to be inclusive that like they don't know what to say. So they're trying to just act like everything's the same as every other family. And so like they'd ask me weird questions. But the bigger, what I'm trying to get at though, is when it was in front of my son, I was always like, I want to put them in their place, but I don't want to make him feel bad. But I know that we're going to have to talk about this later. And so those were the hardest moments for me. And again, you know, some of them a little bit documented in the book, you know, what happens when people say sort of offensive or, you know, non-inclusive things right in front of my son. And I have to say, I mean, I've gotten better over time. Mm-hmm. And I do think that like everything, every response is different and tailored to the environment. Yes. But I do think it's, you know, useful to address these things organically as they happen.
Yes.
So, you know, when somebody asks me if I have any real children too in front of my son,
real children. Oh my God.
Yeah. I'll later, you know, pull my son aside like at night, especially, and be like, you know what, can we talk about today and what happened? And I noticed usually he tries to not really pay attention to what happened. So
right.
It's hard for me to know like how much I should push it. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I say like I let it go organically. Like I bring it up. I think he's tired of me saying to him all the time, you know, we can talk about anything. You have any questions? Like we can talk about anything. I've said that so many times. But these are just really tough things that I feel like thank you for the show because they're not talked about enough. And people have a ton of questions about them.
Yeah.
And and anybody who's a parent knows, you know, there's no guide. I mean, I feel like the hardest thing about motherhood is there is no answer key. There is no book where you can look up, you know, what age.
I've said that so many times.
You know, like. Yeah.
They talk about the first 12 months, but what about the rest?
Yeah. You know, what do you do when he's like 10 years old and he's like, I hate my life? Like, how do you, you know, reply to that? Or you find that he stole a pack of gum from the gas station. Like, how do you, there's no answer key. And so for me, that's been the hardest part about motherhood. And I feel like all parents will relate to some of that, you know, in this book.
Oh, definitely. You know, and I think it could actually relate to even things that are not just interracial, you know, some of the lessons that you show in your book, I think people could actually learn, you know, and apply it to different situations because, you know, how old is your son right now?
So my son is 12 right now.
Okay. So he's about sixth grade around, right?
Well, he's seventh. Yeah. He's a very late birthday. So he's like the youngest in his class. He's actually seventh grade. Yeah.
So, you know, he's in middle school now. And how did you feel in school? Did you get some racial remarks from the teachers or teachers weren't treating you or your son the way they should?
Well, that's another one of those issues that I sort of feel like I wasn't aware enough of before I became a parent and that my white friends are clueless about. So, you know, when... we made a really big effort to find a good preschool for my son that was interracial and had interracial families just like us. So it was a great preschool. But then when it came time for kindergarten, I didn't know exactly where to go. So the idea was I was looking for a school that was, because we were probably going to move, that was like majority Black and very highly, you know, academically rated. And my ignorance or white privilege or whatever as a white woman was to not realize how difficult it is to find that.
Yeah.
So, and I talked to Black friends and you remember when my really good friend said, you know, she's like, well, I'm moving to an all white neighborhood. My son's going to be the only Black kid in his school, but I'm okay with that because he's going to be a lawyer or a doctor. And I want him to get used to that kind of environment now. And he can get all his culture when he comes home to us.
Right.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
And that was good for her. And I remember her telling me that, and more than one of my Black female friends telling me that. But then I realized I can't make that same decision because he'd be the only Black kid and then come home to us too.
Right.
So I actually made a different decision for kindergarten. We moved to a neighborhood that was not as academically highly ranked, but had a good diversity mixture, still not majority African-American, but a good diversity ranking.
Yeah.
And I have to say it was the wrong decision.
It was
I hate to say
okay.
this, but.
Why do you say that?
Because the school, so I am a working mother and yes. I thought, well, what can I bring? So when my son comes home, since I am a professor, I can help him with the schoolwork. I can't bring the diversity so I can help the schoolwork. Well, I've learned that one parent or two parents on their own cannot rescue a child from a failing school district. If a teacher doesn't return your calls and won't tell you what's going on, I didn't learn until the end of second grade that, so my son is ADHD and he's a little hyperactive. The teacher had put him way in the back, separated from all the other students. So she just ignored him for the entire, the last day of class when we went to pick him up, I noticed his desk was way in the corner and that he'd been ignored for months at a time.
That could be one of the reasons he had ADHD, because he was reacting to the things he didn't like. He was trying to bring attention to himself because they're pushing him away. It's pretty obvious,
And I was horrified. And, when he needed help in math, I went to the school and said, we have extra tutoring. And they said to me, we only have so much money and we can either help tutor in reading or math. And we, as a school district, have decided that, an adult can't survive without reading, but they can survive not knowing math. So we don't help them in math. We don't give any help in math. And I remember thinking okay, there's no help in math. The teachers are ignoring them. So we moved. I feel bad for my son, but we moved in third grade to a different school district. He's not the only Black kid in the room, but the diversity is not as good, but it's higher ranked. And now he's getting at least a lot of tutoring and a lot of help. But this is one of those things that I think, certainly as a white woman, I was not as aware of going in how difficult finding a good school for my child is going to be.
And, I can relate, but not interracially, but, my one of my children is transgender. And that child came out in high school, and that, for years, my son, who is now a woman, was bullied. And I never knew, because at that time, she kept it to herself. And then when certain things happened and I went to the school, I could see, I read body language. So someone doesn't have to talk to me. I could just look at their body language and I could see exactly what they're thinking. I know between their eyes, their arms, their legs, how they're crossed. And I could see that they were judging my child accordingly to their outside appearance and not by what they were feeling inside. And they weren't considering the child's emotions or what the child was going through. It was the outside. So, it upsets me when I see people judge people according to their shade of skin, how they addressed, it's not what's outside, it's inside. And people sometimes can't get past that because they're very ignorant. And again, it's either what they went through in life or in the environment they lived in, and
yeah, you do understand for sure. And that's why I feel like the audience for this book is really anybody who sort of had a family and experience things like that. You definitely understand very well. And I have to say, the school district we moved out of too, I was sort of hoping my son would make some good friends there and that would be, but he was, the problem was my husband and I would pick him up from aftercare and a lot of the students there noticed that his parents were white and started bullying him about that, sort of saying, saying, well, you're an orphan, you don't have any parents and you don't have any parents. And he was like, he came home like, what does the orphan even mean? And I was, so he, bullying can come from lots of different places.
Especially now with social media too. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And yeah, you know, we got to protect our children. It's tough. Motherhood, parentage in general, it is a tough thing. And I feel
and
like
adults can be just as bad as the children. I thought, you know, I was very naive. I thought when people grow up, you know, because I came from a very, you know, liberal college. And I thought when people get an education and they grow up and they change, you know, because now they're adults and that immaturity has left them, but not so. A lot of people are very immature and still hold very ignorant behaviors and thoughts in their brain. And
I agree with you. That's, you know, it's, again, you know, one of those things sort of I learned as I get older, like it can come from family if you don't.
Yeah. Well, I always say the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
And you're right. I mean, it you know, would be interesting sometimes to try to understand, you know, what in their childhood made them that way and whatnot. And, you know, you want to give people a little bit of understanding, but at the same time, you know, you got to protect your children. And it is just surprising. And I'm with you too. I sort of thought like colleagues in education would be better, but they're not always either.
No.
So, you know, I mean, I feel like I'm sounding prejudiced or elitist because like I assumed quote unquote educated people would know better, but no,
yeah.
Like, and so, yeah, you have to have a clear mind about everybody and everything.
And I have to say, when it comes, I know people who were adopted and, you know, when, you know, some people had found their biological parents, but they never considered them their biological, they know that they were their biological parents, but their parents were the people who raised them and loved them. And that was always their mindset. And, you know,
it was funny. So my mother was a psychologist and I remember her once telling me, I probably was fighting with her and, you know, told her I didn't like her as my mother or something. But I remember her telling me, she's like, well, you do know the fantasy of having different parents is very common. Like the Harry Potter series is based on that. You know, like there's so many children wish they had different parents. And so when my mother told me that, and I assumed it was like all children. And it was funny because like not that long ago, I said something to my son, like, you know, you probably wish you had a different mother. And he was like, no, like, I love you. Like, and aww. I was like, I thought all kids, you know, wish they had different parents. But it was really sweet because I could tell like my bringing up the notion to him was almost like, I've never thought that. Why are you saying that, Mom?
Yeah. Yeah. So what is the main goal that you're trying to accomplish with this book? Like, what would you like people to mainly get from this book? Because it seems like, you know, you're taking your own experience, you're taking all those journals, all the things you went through in life, you're clustering up into a book that could actually have principles and give educational knowledge to someone. At the same time, they're reading it and they're enjoying a story, but yet they're learning from it at the same time.
Yeah. So I think a couple things. I mean, one, the main thing I was first thinking about was just providing the perspective of motherhood and interracial adoption. Because again, you know, I hear stories from other, or questions from other people, but you know, my own experience, as I've said, like I was surprised about, you know, how hard, you know, finding a good school would be. And, you know, I was surprised by families' reactions. So I feel like providing a perspective is sort of like, you know, a big thing the book is trying to do. But another thing I really do feel like is hope a little bit. I mean, the book is, primarily about, again, motherhood, and the title Seeking Forgiveness is about seeking forgiveness for all the mistakes you make as a mother. You know, you hope you're doing it right, and you hope, you know, when your kid later goes on the therapy, they don't blame you for everything, but you know, you don't know. But, you know, the book does sort of, and so the, you know, somebody once asked me if I like the mother in the book Seeking Forgiveness, which was interesting because I don't present her as perfect. She makes mistakes and she says stupid things and yells at her son sometimes when she shouldn't. But the idea is a love of a mother for her son can overcome a lot.
Yes.
Parental love is so strong and so important.
Yes.
That it can give hope even when things are really tough. And I think that's hopefully what is one of the main things that comes out of this book.
You know, and honestly, when you say the word perfect, I don't believe in the word perfect. I don't even think it should be in our vocabulary, to be honest with you, because no one on this planet is perfect. We have the media trying to give these fake, you know, images of people that are quote unquote perfect, but perfect doesn't exist. We all make mistakes. That's how we learn. We learn through our mistakes in life. We try to do the best we can, especially as parents. I think people don't understand that, you know, like you said, there was no book. You know, I didn't, you know, after 12 months, you know, it was like, all right, you're on your own. And, you know, there was a lot of things that even that book couldn't even help me with, you know, that I experienced, you know, raising children and, you know, and a lot of things pop up that you never knew or imagined, and you have to do your best.
And we have to give ourselves grace, and, you know, a measure of, like, you know, forgiveness. I mean, you know, there's another story. For a while, I used to volunteer at something here in St. Louis called Room at the Inn, Ratty, where homeless families, it's usually mostly mothers and children, you know, can come and spend a night and get dinner. And so I would do sort of the dinner shift, and I started taking my son with me because he could play with the children. Like, my son's very extroverted. He loves playing, you know, more people to play with. So he was happy to go. You know, we went, I mean, we were volunteering together for like 3 months, and then we get in the car. Again, my son has a penchant for asking me important questions in the car. We get in the car after like 3 months of volunteering at Room at the Inn. And as we're driving out, he says to me, you know, why are all the people, homeless people who come there, Black? And it dawned on me that for the past 3 months, they had all been Black, and the volunteers were all white. And of course, he was going to notice the difference. And again, in the moment, I didn't know what to say. I remember that I just started rambling about, like, institutional racism, and some people, you know, are dealt cards that are harder, and they try their best. And, you know, I rambled into slavery. I drove home with my giving this, like, random historical thing to, like, you know, a 7 or 8 year old, whatever he was. And I remember we get home and come to the front door, and I say to him, like, you know, do you want to talk about this more? You can ask me anything. And he was just like, can I just watch some TV now? And I remember in that moment thinking, I probably did not handle that well. I needed a more pithy response. I do think parents should think about how to talk about racism before it comes up a little bit sometimes, you know, like. And so I don't think I did the best job, but like you said, we need to forgive ourselves. We need to give ourselves grace. And I do believe the most important thing is just keeping the communication open. And hopefully he'll come back and ask me more questions about it, and I can try again.
And I think sometimes our emotions take over. And I think sometimes, even though I always think before I talk, sometimes your emotions take over, and you sometimes don't always say, you know, it's just your emotions, you know, take over. And you've been through so much with the interracial adoption, and you've gotten some emotional abuse from your family members, and from people in society, and from people in the schools, and even from doctors, like dentists and so forth. And it's very rough when, you know, especially when your child is absorbing all this, it takes a toll on them. And they, you know, people don't understand, but, you know, how our children are raised makes them the person they are. And when they see negative behavior, you know, in our society, you know, in a sense, it can hurt them. And, you know, so as parents, we do the best we can to protect them and to make them understand that not everyone in this world is going to be nice. And unfortunately, you know, nobody is perfect, and we can't control other people's actions, but in our home, we can try to give them the best love and the best, you know, protection, and do the best we can. And I think that goes a long way, because it's kind of like a nest. When the bird comes out of the egg, we do the best to raise them, and then eventually they fly away, but they always come back, especially if the household is healthy. They'll always fly back to the mother, you know, and, you know, that's how we have to kind of think about it. You know, we can't control other people's actions. We can only control our own. And we're always going to make mistakes here and there, but the best we can do is learn from our mistakes, admit to our mistakes, and then try our best, you know, the next time to do it better.
Yeah. And just love our children. You know, it's funny. Somebody asked me if my son has read the book, and he knows about the book, of course. And when I first finished it and had, like, you know, a final draft 10, like, ready, you know, ready to go, like, I had it printed out on my desk. And I said to my son when he woke up that morning, like, you know, the book I'm writing about, you've done, you want to come see it? And he came down and he saw the stack of papers, and he's like, where's the book? That's just paper. Like, whatever. And he knows all about it, but he hasn't read it. I haven't read it to him. And I don't know when or if he will, but I feel like, you know, my son, you know, you're saying, like, they're going to grow up and they're going to go off in the world. And I, you know, I like to imagine him in college And, you know, maybe some, he's having a tough time and he looks over and I, it's a thin book. I've like stuffed it on his bookshelf when I moved him in. He can look over and see that book and know that it's a book about a, you know, mother's love for her son. And that I wrote it like to and for him. And yeah. He can see it even if he hasn't read it, and just know that it is a sign of immense love.
Yes.
And he can feel comforted. So I don't know when he'll read it, but he'll always know that I have this like love letter to him that I wrote.
Yeah. And I have to say also, even with my son, you know, who transgendered to a woman, I knew since my child was a baby that, you know, my child was, you know, either gay or transgender. You know, and so it wasn't, you know, it was, you know, at first I thought my, at that time he was a boy, I thought he was gay, and then he transgendered to a woman. And then, you know, I went through the process of, you know, absorbing all this, because, you know, it's not something you absorb 1, 2, 3, but throughout this entire time, I was always supportive and loving, and I stood by my child. And just like you are standing by your child, no matter what color or race or culture, they realize that, they see that, they appreciate that, and they love that. And my child already has left to go to college, and she is flourishing in college. And she always talks about how much she misses us and she wants to come back. And, you know, so just like, you know, you're raising your son right now, doesn't matter what color or culture he is, you know, he sees how much you love him. He sees everything you went through, and he was there right next to you. You both went through it together, and that support and that love that you gave him, that goes a long way, and that will never be forgotten. So I think what the outside world does doesn't really mean so much. It's the world inside, the family unit, that means the most, I think. You know, he'll develop that thick skin. He'll learn what the world is about. He'll learn ways to handle, you know, some abusive or verbal behaviors that he'll see in this world. But when it comes to his family life, if he came from a productive and healthy family life, he'll always come back and he'll always have an abundance of love for the people who supported and loved and cared for him.
You should write a book too about your experience. I mean, I bet it's another one of those, like, you know, you're trying to figure it out. You sort of don't know, things happen and you have to, you know, adjust and deal and learn and love.
Yeah.
And have you ever thought about writing a book?
I was actually told by a lot of people that I should write a book about that, because you go through a process, you know, it's not, you know, it's something I always knew, but it's hard when you raise a child as a boy, and then all of a sudden your child, you know, transgender, because they don't see themselves as a man, they see themselves as a woman. And even my hairdresser, who's gay, said, you know, you don't choose this. He goes, if I had a magic wand, I'd be heterosexual. He says, you're born like this. And, you know, for me, it was like I had to mourn, because in my eyes, I lost a son and gained a daughter. So it was a new beginning with a daughter. And it was like the death of my son. Yeah. So, you know, I was like, where are the chapters in the book about this? I said, it went up to 12 months, but I said, now what, you know?
Well, and it doesn't end, right? I mean, so like, you went through this whole learning process, but it's also going to be something, you know, for the rest of your life. You know, they're in college now, but what happens about marriage? And, you know, like, it's probably going to be a continual learning and adjustment and loving and figuring it out and joy and shock and sorrow and everything all together. Like, it never ends.
No, it doesn't. You know, it's life, you know, especially, you know, being a parent, it never ends. It never ends. You know, there's always different things to worry about, and, you know, problems get, you know, it's just different problems and different things to go through in life. But the biggest thing is love, you know, as long as that family bond is there and that love is there, love can conquer all. And, you know, and I love that you've written this book, because, you know, you hear about adoption, you hear about all the trauma people go through trying to adopt a child, but, you know, you actually were blessed with a child, and it doesn't matter the shade and the culture of the child. You know, who says a child has to be, you know, the same nationality? And if the child, if you were Greek, or if you were Jewish and you had and you adopted an Italian baby, what's the difference? You know, it's, you know, because they visually can't notice They don't look through what's on the inside. They're looking on the outside, you know, and people, it's other people's problem and they need to get through with it. Yeah. And it's
I always feel, you know, I do like to hope that the book is a little bit of pro sort of interracial adoption and, you know, all parenting is like sorrow and joys and everything all together. But, you know, I certainly don't want to judge other people who like adopt a different way or don't want to adopt or whatnot. Because while I'm sort of pro interracial adoption, I feel like not enough people have even considered it or considered the foster system. At the same time, I mean, I do want to say that I agree with the idea that if you're going to do something like this, you have to make the effort to educate yourself and you have to make the effort to be aware of other cultures.
Yes.
And it can be, and you know, on some level, you know, if you're not willing to make the effort, then you should think harder about if you sort of want to adapt across cultures. So I think it's a wonderful, joyful, positive experience.
Yes.
But I do, after having gone through it as much as I have so far, do have a much greater understanding of why there are people who are, you know, against interracial adoption. I think they're against it because there are some people who aren't willing to learn and keep an open mind and make the effort. And, you know, we're saying like, you know, mother and, you know, love can overcome everything, which is true. But I do think it also, it helps to have friends. And, you know, like with my son, there's the talk about the police and how to deal with the police. And that's already organically come up a few times with us. But I actually enlisted a Black male friend to talk to him about it, because I thought he would hear it better from a person who looked like him.
Right.
He's been through it. So mm-hmm. like, you know, it takes all of us and to do this stuff as a community. And
100%.
I'm rambling a little bit now, but.
No, it's true. You know, if you have support from others, that's what gets you through a lot of things in life, you know, and knowing that you're not alone, knowing that other people are experiencing it and people that you could talk to and relate to, it goes a long, long way.
So, the more we can talk about these things and bring everybody on board with all our different perspectives, the better. Communication is the key.
And, you know, by you adopting this child, you were able to give this child a good life, a life that child may not have had if they weren't, you know, if you weren't given the opportunity to adopt that child, you know. So, you know, it doesn't matter, you know, what color that child is, what skin color, or, you know, what culture. It's what matters is that they're getting the love, the attention, and they're provided with the things they need in order to have a good life and a good future. And that's exactly what you're doing right now, is giving that child everything they need.
And he made me a mother, right? So he gave me the
yes
gift of motherhood, and he every day keeps me aware of things. I mean, this past weekend he went to a Polo G concert. I didn't even know who Polo G was before. So. I'm learning things. He's given me a lot of learning too.
Now, has your book been published yet? Is it out now?
So you can pre-order it on Kindle, and it is in the middle of a Goodreads giveaway right now. If you're on Goodreads and want to sign up for a free e-giveaway of it, the paperback, the print version, is not available till October 18th. So like 1 month from today,
October,
all like the pre-press. But you can see the pages on, you know, Amazon and Barnes and Noble and whatnot, but it's officially available for a hard copy purchase October 18th.
Now, what's your website address? Where can people find you?
Yeah. So the best place to learn about all of this is my website, which is www.LearRachel, one word, which is LearRachel.com. And there you can even read like the first three chapters of the book if you want to just get a feel for it before you buy it. You can read the first three chapters of my previous book, some of my other writings and things that have been published. I have a blog as well. And the book also, Seeking Forgiveness, right now it's being serialized. You can read even a few more than the first three chapters at the Racial Equity Storytelling Project, Before Ferguson, Beyond Ferguson. So you can go to that website too to read the first couple chapters. My website has links to like all my writing and my blog, www.LearRachel.com.
Oh my God. It's been such a pleasure speaking with you. And, you know, I'm so glad you're able to talk about this subject, because this is a topic that, you know, we really need to get more people aware of, you know, that, it, you know, people can't really judge people by color. We need to judge people by their insides, by their heart, what's inside them, not what, how we look on the outside. And so many times our society gives people the perception that, you know, we are to judge people how they look on the outside. And we really need to see through that and really understand it's not how we look on the outside. Yeah. It's what the person is on the inside, their heart, their actions, their behaviors, you know, that's what matters, you know, and, you know, it's, I think this is great that you've written this book, and I wish you the best of luck. Tell everybody again what the title is so they don't forget.
Seeking Forgiveness.
Okay.
And thank you for publicizing the book and just having, you know, a podcast where you talk about great things. I mean, it takes, like, again, all of us. And so your willingness to have me on and talk about seeking forgiveness is great. Thank you.
Oh, you're very welcome. And I have to say, when you talk about the word forgiveness before we go, I think people have to learn how to forgive. We need to forget the past. The past is the past. We cannot change the past. We need to look at the present, and we need to work on changes in the present to make a beautiful future. And when we don't forgive, we hold a brick, you know, over our shoulders, and we can't move on because that brick is too heavy for us to walk, and we get stagnant in our own thoughts and our own, you know, mishaps. And, you know, it's all about forgiveness. The world becomes a better place when we can really understand how to forgive each other and start to love each other.
And it can be hard, but yeah.
Yeah, it could be. Forgiveness is a very hard thing.
It is
a very hard thing. But, you know, I say baby steps. Baby steps is the way. And, you know, eventually, if you really want to feel better and you want to forgive, you know, and you want to move on, you know, you could do it. It's not, nothing in this life is a 1, 2, 3 thing. Everything takes time, you know. But if we can forgive the people, you know, around us, or forgive, you know, our history and things that happen, so many good things could come about it. And we really need to, you know, start forgiving and stop holding grudges and stop, you know, let go of what we were taught and figure out a new way, a new beginning.
Yeah. I mean, I think we definitely shouldn't forget what happened. We should understand history, but then yes, we should forgive and be able to move forward without forgetting the past, but trying to process, understand it.
Yes.
And try to build a better future for everybody.
100%. So one more time before we go, just tell everybody your title and your website, just so they don't forget.
Yeah, the book is Seeking Forgiveness, a narrative memoir on interracial adoption. And you can read the first 3 chapters at www.learachel, L-E-A-R-A-C-H-E-L, no spaces, .com.
It's been such a pleasure, Leah, to come on our show and to hear all this wonderful stuff that you provided us and to tell us about your book, you know, and I hope one day you can come back on the show and we can talk more about this subject. Thank you so much for everything.
Thank you, Coach Stacy. Thank you so much. You too.
Have a great day.
Take care.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Every sandwich has bread. Every burger has a bun. But these warm, golden, smooth steam buns, these are special. Reserved for the very best. The Filet-O-Fish. And you can have them too.
For a limited time, the classic Filet-O-Fish you love is joining your McDonald's favorites on the 2 for $3.99 menu. Limited time only. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer. Single item at regular price.
Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.